Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And today we're going to be talking about what's in our cart for the upcoming set, Zendikar Rising. So as with our last one, this is not a deep card-by-card dive of the new set. What we're looking at are which singles we're interested in trying to pick up when the set releases. But before we get to that, let's talk about some news that's come out recently. So we got our first looks at Commander Legends. And one of the things that stood out to me were the monocolored partners. What did you guys think about this release?
There was not enough. As a small tease of what's to come in Commander Legends. But
yeah, we definitely have the first very tiny appetizer of the 41 partners that are coming, which will be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to see how they all shake up, and maybe one or two, which I don't think is a huge ask, will be interesting enough.
Now, what do you guys think compared to the original dual-colored partners? Since these also can partner with anything, do you think these will be as format-defining as some of the two-color partners have been for higher power levels like CEDH?
I think it definitely depends on where you're setting your bar for the traditional partners. Like, do I think any of these are going to be able to dethrone Thrasios Temna? No. They did specifically mention that they're trying to not design the next Thrasios, and Vile Smasher was one of their examples. But again, out of 41 of them, I'm sure one or two will be accidentally really good.
Yeah, I think they're going to learn from their mistakes with the previous command or partner commanders and make them to where they feel good, synergistic together, and they can mix and match, but not be anything to where they just warp a format so much so like the previous ones did.
And then the other thing that's nice to know is they're all going to be monocolored. So there is already going to be a trade-off from going from a four-color commander pair to a three-colored commander pair, which is actually something I'm looking forward to because I enjoy the customizability of the original commander partners. But it'll be very interesting to see them in a more limited light where we only have X colors to play with, equal three instead of four as it is currently. Any other thoughts from what we've seen for Commander Legends so far?
I know a lot of brewings have been going around Elena, Kessick Trapper, which is the red of the two legendary partners that's gone out, in terms of utilizing her ability to generate mana equal to the greatest power of creatures coming to the battlefield. So there's some interesting stuff going on around about that.
Jake, any other thoughts on Commander Legends before we move on?
Nope, just waiting to see more spoilers.
All right, you're right there with us then. So let's talk about some games we've played recently. Alex, you've been doing some work on Winota, and she's getting mean.
Yeah, so Winota kind of shifted towards the Staxi-esque effect, but I didn't want to go full into it, because I like being able to sometimes just flip something stupid onto the battlefield, like Angrath's Marauders or something like that. But I think after trying to figure out what CDH deck I wanted to play and what decks I had together, I think I'm actually just going to pull the fun stuff out of Winota, and that's just going to be my competitive deck for a while, I think.
All right, Jake, on the other end of the spectrum, you brought us your first tribal deck.
Yeah, we've our play group is large-ish, and we just got another fairly new Magic player. So they had some decks based off of the Commander's Quarters decks, which I think are like $50 budget decks. So I wanted to have something that wasn't horrible and degenerate like all my other decks. So I decided to just throw a rat tribal deck together with Marrow Gnawer. It's definitely nothing too fancy, but it is mono black. It's got a couple combos in it. Yeah.
It got there.
I think it's currently at 24 copies of Rat Colony.
And again, those rat colonies, they got there.
I missed the end of the first game as I was sleeving up cards and still finishing up work. Somehow you ended up generating infinite rats?
Yeah, I have Thornbite Staff. It is a garbage equipment, but what it does is it will untap something. It'll untap the equipped creature if a creature dies. So Marrow Gnawer just eats a rat and then makes some rats and then eats a rat and makes some rats. So I wind up with infinite rats, and using Whip of Erebos, I reanimated one of the rat colonies. So it was an infinite power, one toughness attacker with haste.
And fear.
And fear. And prevented combat damage it took and, you know, other stuff.
Yeah, it got around my mono-white deck very well. And that was how I died. I've been playing a lot of monocolor recently between my mono white Oketra and my mono red Torbran. My new Nethroi brew in Abzan still needs some work. I'm still trying to hone in on what I want to do with it exactly, but we'll get there eventually. All right, so let's get on to the main topic then. Let's talk about what is in our cart for Zendikar Rising. There were a couple of honorable mentions we wanted to discuss before we talked about what we are specifically excited about. Alex, you put a couple of these on here. Why don't we start talking about those pathway lands? So what are these? How do they work?
Pathway lands are lands that on one side, they are a basic land of one type. And on the flip side, they are a basic land of another type.
Hold on a second. No. They're not basic lands. And they do not have any basic land types, right?
They don't.
That's right, they don't.
Forest.
Otherwise, they would be much more interesting.
Sorry.
Agreed.
When I say basic, I meant, you know, it is a plains. It is a forest. It's not like a dual-colored land or anything of that nature. It's simply
not a plains or forest. It taps for green or it taps for white.
Right. So it taps for a single color. It comes into play untapped with no drawback to it. So it looks like the drawback is going into how these double-faced modular cards are going to work. So double-faced modular cards are essentially a choice you have when you want to play the card. You either get to play one side of it or the other, and you get to choose this when you would play the card. In this case, with the lands, when you're going to play the land from your hand, or if you're going to play it from your graveyard with an effect like Crucible of Worlds, you will say, oh, I want the side that taps for white, or I want the side that types for black. Now, importantly, these are not typed, so we do not get to search for a swamp using a Bloodstained Mire, for example. But they're pretty decent for fixing overall. Where are you guys coming down on these? Are these something you're interested in?
I'm more interested on the ones that have the module dual face cards that have a spell or ability on one side or a land on the other. But it is worth noting in terms of fixing, especially at like lower power levels or, you know, budget, depending on where, you know, these price points fall for these, as a good way to provide fixing, especially if you can use both sides, depending on what you need.
For me, it's probably going to be like, I don't see them going in any of my decks currently. I think they would be helpful in the low, like, 2 to 3 color decks that also want to run perhaps a Tainted Pact mana base. Just having some way to add more lands of different names is helpful.
Yeah, that's actually exactly where I'm on with it. I want to try to track down the blue-black one for my competitive Yuriko deck because, yeah, Tainted Pact mana bases where you have to have every single land have a different English name in two colors is very difficult, and it leads to some questionable choices. And if they come into play untapped, that's probably going to make the cut in that deck.
Yeah, I like the design. They're not bad. I like them more than a lot of the recent attempts at making some dual lands, but I don't think they're up to snuff to dethrone the stuff that's in most of my decks.
Now, one of the things that I've heard is a rumor that we will be seeing the completion of this cycle in 2021, as this may have actually been a mechanic that was destroyed for one of next year's sets. Haven't actually seen that confirmed anywhere yet, but if that's the case, then we could see the full cycle within another 6 months.
I may be running some of them in Omnath, just to make triggering Field of the Dead easier, I think.
Also another good place where you need lots of different names.
Yeah, it's essentially the same issue as Tainted Pact.
All right, there were a couple of other cards here we had as honorable mentions. Alex, I believe you added a card called Null Priest of Oblivion.
I did. Null Priest of Oblivion is just a 2/1 Vampire Cleric for 2, for 1 and a black, with a kicker of 3 and 4, Menace, Lifelink, and when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. I like it for the non-kicked aspect, for Markov, since, you know, I'm the tribal peasant of the group. It's just a 2/1 Menace, Lifelink, Vampire for 2. That comes down early in Markov, and it's great. And if it comes down later, well, I have a chance of bringing back something from the yard into play as well.
And speaking of Markov, I think you have another one on our honorable mentions list too.
I do. It's just another vampire to fill the slot. It's a Nighthawk Scavenger. It's a 1+3 for 3 mana, 1 and 2 black, with a Flying, Death Touch, and Lifelink. Tons of text on there. Nighthawk Scavenger's power is equal to 1 plus the number of card types among your opponent's graveyards. So, if it's been an early game, probably won't come down as, you know, too much. It might be a 2-3 if there's a fetch land in play, things of that nature. Maybe a 3-3 if a Sakura type elf gets sacked for something. If it comes down late game, though, then you've got a Flying Death of Lifelinker that can, you know, be a 4-3, 5-3, things of that nature.
All right, so again, something else you're looking at for Markov, or something you're looking at more in general?
For Markov. These are just strictly... A lot of the set has additions for, like, different tribal decks that I have together, or may want to build.
All right. So there was another card that was on our honorable mentions list here called Lithiform Engine. This one appears to be making the rounds as the colorless, splashy, quote-unquote commander card of the set. So Lithiform Engine is 4 mana for a legendary artifact, 2 tap copy target activated or triggered ability you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. 3 tap copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. 4 tap copy target permanent spell you control. The copy becomes a token. This is probably one of the most expensive cards in the set currently. It is something that I know a lot of people are talking about. It is one of the kind of highlight cards that we are going to mention here. I personally don't have a lot of big use for it.
Oh wow, yeah, I just looked at the pre-order price. It's already over $20.
Yeah.
I like that the phrasing of copying a permanent spell is in here now, so that's kind of like officially in the rules for making tokens for permanent spells that you copy. Like, I think of a lot of the clone effects, like Riku, the way it was worded is that it triggers on when something enters the battlefield, and then you can use your triggered effect to make a creature token that's a copy of it. And I don't know. It just feels cleaner this way. I don't think it's good. I'm not going to play it. But I like that the phrasing on it is a little concise.
Okay, I agree with you on that one. It is also kind of nice to see a card that, at least if you squint enough, resembles more expensive cards like Ring of Bright Hearth, resembles cards like Stryonic Resonator, which are very popular cards in the format, puts them onto one artifact body. Probably be a role player in some decks. I don't have any decks, I think, offhand that I'm going to use it for.
I mean, it'll work its way eventually into some deck I try and want to build. I keep thinking I want to build a Psy Master Thopter's deck just to do something with all these artifact cards that I have that are just sitting in a binder doing nothing. So maybe Tribal Thopters or Tribal Mirror might be a thing in the future. Who knows?
All right. And then, Alex, you had one more card on our honorable mentions list.
Forsaken Monument is just a 5-mana legendary artifact with a decent chunk of text on there. Colorless creatures you control get +2/+2. Whenever you tap a permanent for colorless, add another colorless, and whenever you cast a colorless spell, you may gain 2 life. This is just something that goes into the aforementioned, maybe I want to build a Psy Master Thopter's deck, and maybe this goes in it just to make things, you know, a greater value. But it also works out as a doubler, so if you do something with, you know, I can see it maybe working its way into Keenan or something like that, where if you're trying to take advantage of mana rocks, getting the additional one on there helps. Who knows?
That's not bad. Well, if we're out of honorable mentions, why don't we start moving into the individual colors? And we will start, as the color pie does, with white. And Jake, you had our first card you wanted to talk about here.
All right, so there is the Archon of Emeria. It is 2 generic and a white for a 2/3 Archon. It has flying. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn. And non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So this is, you know, just another white hate bear. It's a pretty effective white hate bear. I don't have an immediate use for it, but I do recognize that it's really solid, and as soon as I want to make a deck that has these creatures in it, I am going to slam this in there.
Like Winota?
Yeah, I know the Winota Discord went like crazy on it when it was first spoiled.
Yeah, this is the only card of the set I don't think is super tribally for me that I'm instantly getting and putting in Winota, especially if I'm shifting it to be my competitive deck for the time being.
Now, I think the part that we're all sleeping on here right now is who has already managed to book an artist do an altar of this so that it is Charlie Kelly from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia riding on the back of this bird, so that way this card can really be rule of bird law.
I feel like that is limited to just you.
Yeah, your reference is entirely lost on me, I'm sorry.
Well, we will see what the audience has to say about that. Folks out there in listener land, if you agree that this should be Rule of Bird Law with Charlie Kelly altered onto it, at me.
Jake and I have seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia through all the constant references that John makes to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
You're welcome. All right, Alex, you've got our next card on the list that you wanted to talk about.
I do. The next card is Felidar Retreat. It is a 4-mana enchantment with landfall, which will be a recurring theme for my cards today as I'm shifting my landfall deck from Korvold to Omnath. It has two options when a landfall trigger happens. The first one is create a 2/2 white cat beast creature token, or put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Those creatures gain vigilance until end of turn. So, part of the discussion we had in our previous video was, you know, why switch from Omnath or Korvold to Omnath, and, you know, what are the end game finishers in terms of, instead of just having a big angry dragon, having something that kind of creates essentially a small cat army and then, you know, boosts them seems like a good way to try and close out a game.
So this one's primarily looking at new 4-color Omnath as its likely home.
Yeah, almost exclusively that. Maybe if, you know, someone's got like an Arabo or Rinnan Sari kind of deck that, you know, utilizes cats, it could find its way in there too.
So yeah, it looks like it's designed based on the uncommon cycle of retreats from the original, well, the second time we went to Zendikar, the Battle for Zendikar block. Certainly looks like it's upping the power level from uncommon to rare, as this thing will make lots of creatures, or just make your board ungodly. I would not want to face this in Limited.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm really looking forward to opening this at some point in Limited, just because it's stupid. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, turn 5, play this, play land, laugh hysterically.
Yep.
At least there's no fetch lands in this one. All right, first card I want to talk about from White is a creature, Skyclave Apparition. It is 1/2 white for a 2/2 creature core spirit. When Skyclave Apparition enters the battlefield, exile up to one target non-land, non-token permanent you don't control with converted mana cost of 4 or less. Then, when Skyclave Apparition leaves the battlefield, the exiled card's owner creates an XX blue illusion creature token, where X is the converted mana cost of the exiled card. So when this first got spoiled, there was some confusion as to why Wizards of the Coast was leaving the current, I guess the modern iteration of Oblivion Ring effects, leaving that wording behind and going back to the original wording. But it looks like in this case, there's a very specific reason for it. This card just exiles any non-land permanent that is not a token.
Yeah, I missed that on the first reading of it when it was spoiled. I thought it was just, you know, an Oblivion Ring effect where you exile it until the thing dies and then it comes back. But
this is Beast Within on a creature, but probably better. I mean, yes, you're not going to be able to knock out anything giant, but it leaves a body behind. You can do the flickering trick where if you were to sacrifice Skyclave Apparition or Blanket or whatever before its first ability resolves, then the owner of the card will not get anything out of it. This seems really good.
Yep, I like it.
I don't think there's anything I'm running that play that right now, but it does make me think of Luke in his Brago deck, and he'd probably appreciate it.
Oh, he probably would. This is probably going to wind up in my Oketra deck at the very least, God Eternal Oketra. Having more bodies that will make more zombies from Oketra would be nice, which, in this case, also being able to staple it onto an exile effect from your hand. Yeah, that's everything that Oketra is looking for. All right, Alex, you have the other card in white that you wanted to talk about, and seeing more cats coming.
It is. This is from the Battle for Zendikar Commander deck, Trove Warden. It is a 4-mana 3/4 cat beast, 2 white, with vigilance, and surprise again, landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, exile target permanent card with a converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard. When Trove Warden dies, put each permanent card exiled with it onto the battlefield under the control of that card's owner. So it's a good way to sit there and target some of the key pieces that kind of make Omnath do the things it wants to do. Things like Wayward Swordtooth, Azusa, Crucible of Worlds, Ramunok Excavator. All of those are 3 or less. So if any of my pieces are in the yard, you know, 1 or 2 good fetch lands with Trove Warden in play and then a way to get rid of it, and I've reassembled some of the key pieces to the deck.
All right. Important things to note with it. it's a dies trigger. So if someone were to exile Trove Warden or blink Trove Warden or just bounce it back to your hand, then you've lost the cards forever. But it is a lot cheaper than similar effects like Emiria Shepherd, which doesn't come down until turn 7. Yeah, this is a nice design from Wizards.
It's always the risk that you run stuff like that. You know, I'm going to use Noxious Revival or something, put some on top of my deck, and then someone forces you to mill or shelf your library, things like that. So there's always a risk of trying to utilize a card to bring back, you know, one or more cards from a yard or anywhere, you know, back to your hand or to the into play. But I think it's a small enough risk to try it, because it's kind of limited right now in our playgroup as to how much exile effects are actually out there.
That's fair. All right, if there's nothing else in white that we're interested in, Jake, I think you had our first blue card you wanted to talk about.
So it's Confounding Conundrum, a blue enchantment for one generic and one blue. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, and whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, if that player had another land enter the battlefield under their control this turn, they return a land they control to its owner's hand.
That's strong.
Yeah, it's particularly good against a couple of the landfall decks that are in our meta. I have a semi-casual Alayla soft stacks dumb fairy list that I have not really built, but I've had it in Moxfield or Scryfall or whatever Architect for like 2 years. At some point, I'll probably put it together. When I do this, we'll go in there.
Yeah, I don't have any particular home where it's going to go right now, but this just punishes anybody who is leaning into fetch lands. And once you start to get into higher power levels, like CEDH levels, it just gets crazy.
I don't know how much of an impact it would have in CEDH. It would slow decks down a little bit, but it only happens if another land has entered that turn. So it really just delays the fetch by a turn. And not even like a player's turn, just like I play my fetch and then I pass the turn to John and then I crack my fetch on John's turn. So like it sets me back on my main phase. But I don't know, maybe that's enough to warrant consideration because it is cheap and it replaces itself. I don't know. I think it's one of those fair stacks pieces that hurts people trying to get around the game. And if you're just, you know, playing fair Magic, it literally doesn't do anything to you.
I don't know how mad I'd be if, you know, that came down across the table for me. So excluding fetches, you know, play a land with multiple land drops, like a Zooza or something, and play, you know, I play a land, I tap it for mana, I play another one, it bounces back, I tap the other one for mana, I play it again. So it might actually give me, or landfall players, multiple landfall triggers in a turn where they normally wouldn't have them.
Yeah, I know for a while a lot of decks ran, Oppression? Where, No, not Oppression. The one where...
Overburden,
yeah. With the idea of using that to slow down other decks' mana bases, but it wound up in like the CEDH pods, at least. People were just bouncing their Gaia's Cradle and replaying it and tapping it for ridiculous mana, so I was like, oh, yeah, no, let's maybe not ramp everybody up.
Yeah.
That is true. I think this one needs testing, but there's something really interesting there. All right, so I got a couple of cards in blue I wanted to talk about. And the first one is one of the double-faced modular cards we had mentioned before in Glass Pool Mimic. It is 2 and a blue for a creature shapeshifter rogue. It is a 0/0, and you may have Glass Pool Mimic enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature you control, except that it is a shapeshifter rogue in addition to its other types. You also have the option to play the other face of the card, which is Glass Pool Shore. Glasspool Shore enters the battlefield tapped and taps for a blue. Glasspool Mimic is... It straddles that weird level where it does not get the best possible use of clone effects, where you pay a small amount of mana to copy the best effect, the best creature that any player at the table has. It only can copy the things that you have, which is cool. On the other hand, it does also have the option of there's no tasty targets that you have you want to make a copy of. You can just play it as an additional land. I'm mostly interested in it if I can manage to make a rogue deck actually work or a shapeshifter tribal deck actually work. And the fact that it costs 3 mana is kind of nice. Don't have any home for it yet, but it is a card I hope to get a copy of.
It's right there on the cusp for me. I feel like that if it was two mana and it was limited the same way it is now, I would like it. Or if it was three and could target opponent stuff, then I would like it. But as is, I don't know if the upside of the land will make it better over, like, Phyrexian Metamorph, which is, I mean, three mana and two life to copy the best creature or artifact.
Yeah.
And then stuff like Phantasmal Image, which is two mana to copy anything.
I think this one has a niche home that it wants to be in, and maybe just because I like to do the tribal things, it's how I'm looking at it. But, you know, I know when the previous General Tazri was spoiled, I wanted to build an Allies deck just because it sounded like fun. And, you know, this new Tazri's focus on parties, which also sounds like fun, so that could be a cool tribal thing. The biggest thing that Glass Ball Mimic has going for it is that it comes into play, it can copy another thing you own, but it also keeps the Shapeshifter and Rogue in addition to the other types that it may copy into. So it could help you kind of fill out a party in that regards, because it gets to keep its types along with, you know, anything else that you may have going where it matters for that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how often it's going to be really important to have the land on the other side of these double-faced modular cards. I think that's going to take some playing with for us to understand really what the benefit and what the risks are with it. But I'm interested to see what happens. Now, the other card I had from Blue that I was interested in, I definitely have to get multiple copies of this one, is one I think will be a little bit less controversial, and that is Thieving Skydiver. One in a blue for a 1/1 creature, Merfolk Rogue, with Kicker X. X cannot be zero. So with Kicker, you may pay an additional X as you cast this spell. This Rogue has flying, and when Thieving Skydiver enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, gain control of target artifact with a converted mana cost of X or less. If that artifact is an equipment, attach it to Thieving Skydiver. The last time I said that the Glasspool Mimic was kind of interesting, and we said it was a little bit niche, but Thieving Skydiver is just full-on crazy town, right? Three mana, you get a 2/1 and steal someone's Soul Ring or Mana Crypt.
Yeah.
Why does it say good. X can't be zero?
They want you to actually pay for something.
Yeah, I know why it's on there. I don't like it. I would like it a lot more if it was two mana steal a Mox or a Mana Crypt, but, you know, three mana to do that's not bad, I guess.
Or some of the artifact lands.
Now, importantly, it does not untap the artifact that it steals for you, so it's not like a threatened effect. So you don't lose it, but you also can't use it right away. You have to wait a full rotation of the table before you get to take advantage of the artifact that you just stole if it was a mana rock. Obviously, it has that benefit of being able to steal equipment, and there's a lot of tables where being able to just steal someone's Lightning Greaves from their commander would be kind of nice. Also kind of nice to steal Grevin's Pointy Stick with Shadow Spear. Could be funny to pay three mana to essentially divination by stealing somebody's Skull Clamp and just having it attach immediately to Skydiver. There's a lot of play here, and this one is super, super interesting.
They don't have a home for it off the bat, but I'm definitely going to want to have a copy or two lying around.
You did talk me up on it a little bit. I've actually already ordered all the cards that I was interested in this set, but I might pick one or two of these up.
All right. Alex, when I was going through our list, I didn't see anything that you were interested in blue.
Aside from what you guys mentioned, not really. Not for anything that's going immediately into anything I plan on playing anyways.
All right. So why don't we move on to black then? And Jake, I have to say you're dropping the ball. I have more black cards I want to talk about than you do.
They just did not do it for me in this set. I have one, but yeah, I'll chime in on yours.
The first card I wanted to talk about was called Demon's Disciple. This is a fairly simple card. It is 2 and a black for a 3/1 creature human cleric. When Demon's Disciple enters the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature or a planeswalker. So it has a lot of similarities to Fleshbrag Marauder and Merciless Executioner and Plaguecrafter. It is a little bit better than Merciless Executioner and Fleshbrag Marauder, and a little bit worse than Plaguecrafter, but it's in relevant tribe for this set and for a someday potentially actual tribal cleric deck. So I'm going to get a couple of these cards.
And decks like Marin always want to have, you know, abilities like this to where them sacrificing a creature of their own nets them an experience count or something of that nature. So another effect like this is just, you know, par for course of that deck.
Yeah, getting redundant cards printed is really the only way that you can up your consistency, short of tutors in Commander, since it is singleton. So just any deck that likes this effect would like to have more of this effect.
All right, I think the next one's mine.
It is.
My singular black card is Drauna, the Last Blood Chief, who, surprise, surprise, is a vampire cleric. She is a 4-4 for 5, 3 generic and 2 black, with flying. Whenever Drauna, the Last Blood Chief, attacks, defending player chooses a non-legendary creature card in your graveyard. You may return that card to the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it. The creature is a vampire in addition to its other types. So it definitely adds a form of recursion to get things out of the yard from my Markov deck, but also kind of sticks to the traditional Drauna effects, where attacking is what causes her abilities to go, not necessarily connecting or dealing combat damage, just turning sideways. But the Drauna's, I don't think it's as powerful as her predecessor from Battle for Zendikar, but the Drauna's that they've printed with each set coming out have gotten significantly stronger each go-around.
She might be a little on the high end for what Markov wants to pay in terms of paying for creatures. The effect, giving your opponent's choice, you're always going to get the worst non-legendary creature card from your graveyard, but I don't want to face it in Limited ever.
True.
Fortunately, it is a mythic.
That is very fortunate. Yeah, it is nice overall. I do like every iteration of Drauna so far. They have not really given us a bad Drauna yet.
Yeah, I mean, she is pricey, but with Markov in play, I mean, she comes down. Essentially, it is a 5-5 for 5 with flying, with the option to bring back one of your vampires. And with, you know, vampires being so saturated now from multiple sets, given the point where most of the ones that do make the deck have abilities other than simply just being a vampire. So anything coming back, ideally, will be, you know, one of the better ones. And then with cards like, you know, Phyrexian Reclamation, things of that nature, maybe I can just prune the yard a bit and then just leave what I want in there.
All right, speaking of pruning, Jake, you got our next card.
So this is Feed the Swarm. It is a black sorcery for 1 generic and 1 black. You destroy target creature or enchantment an opponent controls. You lose life equal to that permanent's converted mana cost. So this is black's first targeted enchantment removal. It does have the clause that it has to be of an opponent's controlling, so you can't use it to knock off your own black enchantments that usually have some kind of downside. I mean, it's not great. I would not really play this in any deck that has other options, but if you are playing mono black or black red, this is how you get rid of enchantments, and you don't really have any other options, so for 2 mana at sorcery speed, I'll take it.
Are you really that afraid of Obulet?
It's not just Obulet, but yeah, there's some effects that just kind of would shut down my black decks, like Rule of Law.
Like Rule of Law.
And a couple other little things. It's just nice to have some kind of answer.
That wound is too fresh, Alex.
That would take care of Rule of Law and Linvala. So it's definitely a potent removal. I mean, I'm picking up as many as I can.
Yeah, this is one every single copy I get is going to be saved of this when I crack a box of this set. And the last card that I was interested in talking about from Black is a legend who I don't think is going to go at the helm of a deck, but is going to wind up in a deck, and that is Tabarax, Hope's Demise, excuse me. I think I pronounced his name right, but then put the wrong end of his title in there. This is a legendary creature, Demon Cleric, for 2 and a black. It is a 2-2 with flying. Tabarax, Hope's Demise has lifelink as long as it has 5 or more +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Tabarax. If that creature was a cleric, you may draw a card. If you do, you lose 1 life. So obviously this card is nuts alongside something like Shadowborn Apostles.
Yeah, I was really hoping they were going to reprint the Shadowborn Apostles in this set, because they're going up.
Yeah, they're insanely expensive right now. All signs pointed to them coming back, so I'm a little disappointed that they weren't, but still, I would like to make that deck happen some point.
Yeah, it's a neat effect on a decently cheap creature. It's only 3 mana to get a draw engine going. Well, it's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what you and some other people do with it.
Even outside of Shadowborn Apostles, clerics are concentrated in black and white thanks to Onslaught Block. And that Orzhov color pair is not shy about sacrificing creatures, so even without Shadowborn Apostles, this deck probably has some legs going with it. I want a copy of this. All right, if we're done with black, why don't we move on to red? And Jake, you have our first card again.
All right, this is Leyline Tyrant, a red dragon for 2 generic and 2 red. It has flying. You don't lose unspent red mana as steps and phases end. And when Leyline Tyrant dies, you may pay any amount of red. When you do, it deals that much damage to any target, and it is a 4/4. So this is going to go in my Neheb deck, because it's like designed for a Neheb deck.
Do you think anybody on the design team had a Neheb deck when they were working on this one?
Possibly. I know that's apparently how Helm of the Host was created. Somebody had a Godo deck, and they're like, you know what? I need a good equipment. I don't know if they knew how good it was, or if they just snuck it by, but yeah. So the Neheb deck has an issue where it can generate, like, you know, 50 red mana and then just kind of sit there and go, okay, pass the turn. So this would be kind of cool.
It's strong, though. It is 4 mana for a 4/4 with flying. That is above rate anyway. And then it does have the option of, if someone answers it, they're either going to lose their best creature or a probably monumental amount of life.
Yeah, and it does curve in at 4 mana right under Neheb's 5. So I can play this out and then the next turn follow up Neheb and swing and then bank that 4 mana. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, follow it up and swing, and it's evasive with Neheb. It's like everything Neheb wants. All right, the next card we're going to talk about is one that I am interested in getting a copy of for my Torbran Mono Red deck. Mono Red decks obviously are not the best at card velocity and trying to see more cards in a given turn, but Magmetic Channeler is 1 in a red for a 1/3 creature human wizard. As long as there are 4 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Magmetic Channeler gets +3/+1. Great. A 4/4 is not really what I'm looking for with it, but it's a nice upside. What I'm looking at is its activated ability. For tap, discard a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library, then choose one of them. You may play that card this turn. So this is... technically, it is worse over the course of multiple turns than rummaging, where you would discard a card, then draw a card. But it lets you choose between 2 cards, so it has that upside. One of them is gone forever into exile, but you're red. You don't really care about that.
Yeah, this might also make its way into Neheb, just because it does do a lot of that impulse draw. It might be able to replace one of the one-shots with this as an engine.
The other nice part about it is you may play that card, so you can play a land if you need to hit your land drop, as opposed to cast that card, which would prohibit you from playing a land off of it.
Yeah, that's a nice little bonus.
Yep. And now from wimpy little teeny tiny humans into great big giant minotaurs, we have Alex.
All right, so my card is Morog, Fury of Akum. It is a 6/6 minotaur for 6 for generic and 2 red. Each creature you control gets +1/+0 for each time it has attacked this turn. Landfall, a recurring theme of mine. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if it's your main phase, there's an additional combat phase after this phase. At the beginning of that combat, untap all creatures you control. Yeah,
so we talked a little bit about this in our last episode. In a dedicated landfall deck, this is probably, if not at least as good as, probably better than something like Aggravated Assault. It will reward you for going super wide.
With Omnath looking to do what it wants to do, and with things like Felidar Retreat and some of the other things available on Landfall, it's possible that, you know, with a haste enabler like a Rhythm of the Wild or something like that in play, plus Morag and a decent amount of land drops, it has the potential just to end the game right then and there, which is, you know, nice.
No argument for me. In a go-wide deck based around Landfall, this seems like a no-brainer. It seems awesome. If only it weren't 6 mana, but probably you're going to get what you pay for out of it.
Yeah, I mean, 6 mana, that's a tall ask for a Landfall deck.
Now, speaking of Landfall, Jake, you're getting in on the party a little bit with our next card.
This is Nahiri's Lithoforming. Which I guess is about making rocks or something. It's a red sorcery for 2 red and X generic. Sacrifice X lands. For each land sacrificed this way, draw a card. You may play X additional lands this turn, and lands you control enter the battlefield tapped this turn. That last line is something that I've seen a lot of people glossing over. It's not just the lands that you're playing from Nahiri's Lithoforming. It's literally every land that you're going to put into play this turn from this point on will enter tapped, which is something to keep in mind. Basically, I'm going to toss this in my Korvald deck. I like to sacrifice things in that deck. I have lands in that deck. I like to draw cards in that deck. I am shifting it a little bit toward a lower curve with Ad Nauseam and Peer into the Abyss. So this is only 2 CMC, so that'll be kind of nice to have something with some late game heft that will not, you know, kill me when I get it from Ad Nauseam.
So I asked Alex this last week when we talked about this card a little bit, Jake. Would this replace something like Scapeshift in your Korvald deck?
I don't know. I'll have to sit down and actually fiddle with it. I currently have I know we mentioned this before, but I have 15 cards that I've cut from Korvald to try to make room for some of these. This might have been like the Omnath Locus of Rage spot or something. I'm trying to do more of a one-shot kill, so having a way to put a lot of lands into play at one point is what I'm looking for.
Alex, any more thoughts on Nahiri's Lithoforming from last week when we talked about it?
I'm just jealous that it's good in Omnath, but twice as good in Korvald.
It is literally Korvald buy one, get one free. Sacrifice a land, draw 2 cards. Have fun.
Yeah, I'm almost okay with just paying it for 3, even.
Yeah, and if you're trying to lead up into something like Splendid Reclamation or something of that nature, it's like, sack all the lands. Draw a bunch of cards. And they're all back.
At least a bunch of them are. Now, Jake, you had another card that actually has legitimate landfall printed on it for a card you are interested in picking up.
Okay, yeah. This is Spitfire Lagak. I don't know. It's a dumb little lizard. It's 3 generic and a red for a 3/4. It has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. This isn't a good card, but I'm already playing the 3/2 version of it. So I figured, hey, this is a 3/4. I don't know if it's going to make it in the deck. It does have a showcase art, which looks pretty cool. And since it's a common, it was super cheap. So whatever, I picked one up.
Hey, it's Impact Tremors for a landfall deck. And Impact Tremors is pretty good, even if it costs 4 mana.
Yeah, you definitely need to check out the showcase art if you haven't seen it, because that lizard is like super flexing on everybody, even though he's not that flexy.
Hang on, I'm looking at this sucker right now. Yeah, he really is. That looks like about every other Monster Hunter painting I've seen. That is awesome.
So yeah, like I mentioned, I'm trying to do like a one-shot thing with my landfall. And if I can just get a couple of these effects out, that helps. Yeah, whatever. Maybe it'll make the cut, maybe it won't. At least it looks cool, and it's cheap. Okay.
All right, I think there's at least one card that's left on Alex's list for red that will definitely make the cut for something.
And that is Valakut's Awakening. Valakut's Awakening is an instant for 3, 2 generic, 1 red. Put any number of cards from your hand on the bottom of your library, then draw that many cards plus 1. It's just a super solid effect, especially if the hand is gummed up with things I can't play later on. I just want to look for more lands. And if I draw it later on, then surprise, it is also a land.
Yep, so on the other side, it is Valakut Stoneforge. It is a land that enters the battlefield tapped and taps for a red mana. Basically an instant speed wheel just for you, and you do not have to, quote-unquote, go down a card to play it. So that's...
You go up a card.
Yeah, so you essentially maintain, if you had 5 cards in hand and then you cast it, rather than drawing 4 cards, you will still draw 5 cards. Yeah, Torbrand probably wants this too. Good find, man. And then speaking of explosiveness, Jake, you have another Valakut-themed card on our list.
Yeah, this one is much more likely to actually make it into the final deck. Valakut Exploration, a red enchantment for 2 generic and a red. Landfall, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card for as long as it remains exiled. And it also has at the beginning of your end step, if there are cards exiled with Valakut Exploration, put them into their owner's graveyard, and then Valakut Exploration deals that much damage to each opponent. So landfall that gives you some card advantage, and failing that gives you some damage. Yeah.
Alex, I know you had your eye on this one too. Go ahead, you don't have to be shy.
No, it's the same thing. It's a way to, if you're doing landfall triggers, but in my case, Insomnath is going to want to go ride. In the event that I've got this in play and a bunch of lands, but nothing to go ride with, this provides a way to either look for an answer, or maybe finish off a straggling opponent here if it's later on in the game.
Again, importantly, it uses the phrasing that you may play the exiled card for as long as it remains exiled. So if you happen to exile another land, just keep the good times coming. All right, now, Alex, we're on to your favorite color. So I'm just going to sit back and let you take over for us.
All right, so we're into green, and the next three cards are all mine. The first one is Ancient Green Warden. It is a 5/7 elemental for 6 for generic and 2 forests. With reach, you may play lands from your graveyard, and if a land entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. All right, so it is a 5/7 blocker for flying against Korvold early on in the game. That works for our meta. You can play lands from your graveyard. Okay, so it's also a Crucible of Worlds and a Ramunap Excavator. Solid. And if a land enters the battlefield causes an ability to trigger, it does it a second time. Well, it's also Panharmonicon for landfall triggers. Yes, Magical Christmas land card, maybe? It's pretty much
Is that going
any.
to stop you?
That's. No, that's. Out of all the cards that could be added to a landfall deck, this expansion, Green Warden, I think, is the one that just has the most potential to just do everything. It blocks, plays lands from the yards, and you just get double trigger from landfall triggers.
It
Which,
has. I was going to say it has a lot of words on it that I really like for my kind of decks. But I don't like that four or the four GG in the top right. That's a bit much, so I'm probably going to pass on this one.
But landfall decks don't have issues generating land. But just imagine, Valakut Exploitation doubled. Just get to see twice as many cards.
Green and red are the colors of Christmas.
Exactly. And white. This is great. And blue to water the tree. See, Omnath.
All right, Alex, keep the green train rolling. You got another one here for us.
I do. The next one is Ashaya, Soul of the Wild. You may remember Ashaya from Nissa's Planeswalker back in Battle for Zendikar. For 5 mana, you get a star. Ashaya, Soul of the Wild's power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. Non-token creatures you control are forest lands in addition to their other types. They're still affected by summoning sickness. So this one's also, aside from just coming out as a giant beater, it lets you take advantage of turning some of your dorks and whatnot into forests. So what you can do is you can have your Llanowar off turn into a forest, something of that nature. And if you've got Nissa Worldshaper in play, forest tap for 2, well now your Llanowar off taps for more. If you've got cards that say untap target forest, well now these creatures benefit from being able to untap. So that tons of cool combo potential with it.
Where I'm most interested in this card is actually in a blacklist deck, so green, white, blue, red, like Omnath. But I would be interested in this alongside a card that I have always wanted to try to break, like Jeskai Ascendancy, an enchantment for one, a white, and a blue, one white, one red, one blue, which says that anytime you play a non-creature spell, untap all creatures you control. And if they are all lands that can then tap for mana, you could potentially go ham with it. I'm not sure exactly what type of shell I could make that work with, but hey, as long as we're in Magical Christmas Land, might as well have a giant tree monster on our side, right?
Indeed. And the last one is a Scoot Swarm. It is a 1/1 insect for 3, 2 generic and a green, with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 green insect creature token. All right, doesn't sound like too much. If you control 6 or more lands, create a token that's a copy of Scoot Swarm instead. So this one early game has a ability to kind of go wide and get you some presence on the board. And then late game, it just gets way out of hand.
Yeah, we were talking about this last week with Omnath, and I mentioned this has some similarities to cards like Giant Ataphage, And I mentioned I just like that design of swarmy little vermin who eventually just multiply out of control. And this one certainly has the ability to do that off of landfall triggers. All right, I think that wraps up green. So why don't we try to wrap up then with our multicolor card? And Alex, you have the first one in alphabetical order for us tonight with Akiri.
I do. All right. So, Akiri, Fearless Forager, is a 3-3 for 3, a colorless, a red, and a white. Whenever you attack a player with one or more equipped creatures, draw a card. So, card draw and Boris Voltron. Solid so far. For white, you may unattach an equipment from a creature you control. If you do, tap that creature, gains indestructible until end of turn. So, the only qualm I have with it is that it says one or more as compared to whenever you attacked with an equipped creature. Because, you know, who wouldn't love more card draw than just the one? But, you know, way to generate value and save your creatures from board wipes, which Voltron decks are kind of susceptible to, is nice.
Yeah, so it maxes out at one card per opponent you have remaining in the game. Are you looking to put this into Winota? Are you building a new deck around it?
I did previously have an Akiri Lineslinger Voltron deck that I was playing with, and I thought it'd be interesting to, you know, combine Akiri with Ishai, which is the old bird commander from the previous partner ones, to have like a Jeskai Voltron-esque build. I've always toured with it. I mean, I have all the swords and all the fun equipment, and it, same thing with like wanting to build Psy Master Thopters. I just want to have something to do with
it. All right, that's pretty cool. Next card I have on our list here is Cleric of Life's Bond. It is one and a black for a 2-2 Vampire Cleric. Whenever another cleric enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life. Classic Soul Sister stuff. And then whenever you gain life for the first time each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Cleric of Life's Bond. If I ever make that black-white cleric deck, obviously that goes into it. This probably at least has to fight for a spot in my Karlov deck where I'm trying to keep everything below 2 CMC. I'm going to pick up a couple of it regardless. It shouldn't be too hard to do. I don't think it has much of a home outside of anywhere else, though. Now, the next card is one that I'm interested in brewing around as a new commander, and that is Kaza Royal Chaser. She is a blue and a red for a 1-2 legendary creature human wizard with flying in haste. Then Kaza has an activated ability with tap. The next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn costs X less to cast, where X is the number of wizards you control as this ability resolves. It would be kind of cool to have a tribal clerics deck that does tribal wizards deck that does not necessarily need to have just play a bunch of bad wizards. It would be kind of cool to just have a couple of good wizards that are reducing the cost of otherwise slightly overcosted spells that would be fun to play. So it's a neat take on Spells Matter, and it is a neat take on Wizard Tribal that I would be interested in. I don't think it's going to do anything broken, in all honesty. I don't think there's enough good, cheap wizards to make that work.
They're getting better. I mean, you've got the Narumaha and the other rare one from Dominaria that allowed you to double spells and reduce them, I think. And then with this one, I don't know. And the most recent Baron from Core 2021. I think the number of good wizards out there might actually be trending upward.
All right, Alex, you have our next card when you want to talk about our new Nissa.
Yeah, I was initially really excited about this Nissa back before new Omnath got spoiled. It hands down became the one card I wanted to put in Korvold, because this Nissa is now green and black. She's Golgari now for the first time. She is a 4 loyalty planeswalker for 4. 2 generic, a black and a green. She also has landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, put a loyalty counter on Nissa of Shattered Boughs. Her +1 is untap target land you control. You may have it become a 3-3 elemental creature with haste and menace until end of turn. It's still a land, which is a bit different from her most recent one in War of the Spark, where it was haste and vigilance. You trade off vigilance for menace this time. And her -5 is what really kind of drew my attention, is you may put a creature card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of lands you control onto the battlefield from your hand or graveyard with 2+1/+1 counters on it.
Yeah, the hand was the part that I was missing when we were talking about this last week. The fact that it does either one is some nice versatility and really lowers the setup cost you need for a card like this.
Definitely. Now you play Anissa, you manage to, plus it early on, and then just one or two fetch lands puts her, you play her, you untap a land, you put her to 5, you play 2 fetch lands with extra land drop, she's at 9. And the next turn you go into it, you can play pretty much anything in Korvold out of your hand or out of the yard. And she recovers, she's incredibly resilient. She takes damage. So long as she survives and you've got landfall triggers, you can just, bounce her right back up.
She going to make the cut in your Korvold deck, Jake?
Probably not. I do like the fact that they're branching out into, landfall on Planeswalkers and stuff. It's, Planeswalkers have been around for a lot longer than a lot of us old Magic players remember, but it still feels like they have a lot of exploration they can do on the design, so I like seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Alex, I think it goes without saying that Omnath, Locus of Creation, is on your to-acquire list.
It is. Not only is Omnath it's the full art Zendikar travel poster version of it, which looks amazing. And it's also our next card. So it's Omnath, Locus of Creation. It's a 4/4/4, sands black. So red, green, white, and blue. When Omnath enters the battlefield, draw a card. So that's one ability you get simply for casting him. Landfall, to no one's surprise. When a land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 4 life if this is the first time this ability has resolved this turn. If it's the second time, add Sands of Black to your mana pool. Once again, red, green, white, blue. If it's the third time, Omnath deals 4 damage to each opponent and each planeswalker you don't control. So there's a wall of text on there.
Yeah, and for a detailed discussion on Omnath, I'm going to refer you back to episode number 5 when we discussed Omnath in detail.
Yeah.
We were over an hour just chatting about Omnath and all the fun we could have with it.
I listened to that one.
Play Omnath, go burr. That's pretty much what happens.
Yep. And keeping on the tribal theme, the next card I want to talk about is one I really want to brew around and possibly break my rule and have 2 decks with the same color identity, and that is Aura, Skyclave Hierophant. It is 2 a white and a black for a 3/3 legendary creature core cleric with lifelink. Whenever Aura, Skyclave Hierophant, or another cleric you control dies, return target creature card, target cleric card, with a lesser converted mana cost from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Wait a minute. John, This is an Orzhov Scrap Trawler. You're not fooling me.
Yeah, I know. But it only does it for clerics. It's fine.
Conspiracy?
Why would I want to do that? I could just dig out all those amazing clerics from Onslaught Block.
Yeah, but then Scrap Trawler could be a cleric.
Rot Lung Reanimator, son.
Mechanical cleric.
No, I am definitely going to build this deck somehow. I'm a little sad that the Shadowborn Apostles did not get a reprint in this set. I'm a little sad at how much I'm going to have to pay to get the other 20 of them that I need. But yeah, I will be trying to build this deck. It is everything I want to do. It is Scrap Trawler. It is Orzhov Aristocrats. It is Cleric Tribal. Yes.
So one thing I want to touch on, not necessarily on the card itself, but just something that Wizards has done. I don't know if either of you follow along with the Magic story for the sets that come out, but I enjoy lore in many ways, shapes, or forms. So for this set, it's pretty much a Indiana-esque Jones adventure between Nissa and Nahiri. And Nahiri, to take place of the mechanics in the set, goes and builds a party. Of those party members, every single one of them that appears in the story also has cards with similar abilities associated to them. I bring this up because we talked a bit earlier about Commander Legends, where this is the first time we're seeing cards for named characters that showed up way back in Shadows of Innistrad. So it just makes me really happy that they're telling the story and you get those cards to play with immediately and not 6 years later.
I can appreciate that. I don't know how long we had to wait before we finally got to have cards like Safi Eric's daughter, who infamously told Hans to run because it was the Lurgoyf.
Yawgmoth.
Yeah, that was Urza. A pretty long wait, too.
The only thing we had before Urza was the Blind Seer.
Not quite as good. All right, Alex, why don't you bring us home with the last card you wanted to talk about here?
All right, and one of the only cards that's not actually for any of my current decks or landfall related is Tazri, Beacon of Unity. She is a 4/6 for 5, 4 generic and a white, but this spell costs 1 less for each creature in your party. So this types into wanting to build, you know, tribal decks, as I am wont to do. Before it was allies, this time it's, you know, building for a party. She has an additional ability for 8 mana, or 1 blue, 1 black, 1 red, and 1 green. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal up to 2 cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard, and or ally cards from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest in the bottom of your library in a random order. So, she's definitely seems like kind of like the de facto party leader commander for what she does. My only issue is that that's a decent investment, a mana investment, to look at the top 6 cards that you may or may not hit, and they go to your hand and not to, you know, into play. So it's an ability that, you know, you resolve Tazri and maybe you have the mana open to do it, but you hold until, you know, the beginning, at the end of the previous player's turn before, you know, you actually activate it. It's a lot to do in one turn.
Yeah, from a big picture perspective, number one, I'm glad that Tazri looks backwards and can still fill the role of the allies commander that Tazri was meant to fill. Tazri was not always just a food chain deck, believe it or not. Number two, I like the party mechanic a lot better from a design standpoint than the allies mechanic. Allies were always meant, supposed to represent a party of adventurers going off, and even in the original Zendikar block, they did divide them up as like warriors and clerics and wizards, with each one kind of having a defined role of what it would do. Like the warriors would always get bigger, whether it was +1/+1 counters or a temporary pump off of landfall effects or allies entering the battlefield. And I just think that it's going to be easier to tell that that card that a person played is a cleric and counts toward party, as opposed to trying to determine whether or not it is a ally that will be counting towards someone's party or not.
Yeah, and, you know, it looks like she'd be pretty strong and limited, too. Like, her ability can also be tapped for generic. So if you're running just a two-color party build in standard or in limited draft, anything of that nature, then, you know, it's only costing you, you know, 4, 5, or 6 to, you know, utilize her ability as compared to, like, a full dedicated one, which is really cool. And if she doesn't get removed, I mean, she's going to help you dig through your deck. You're going to always have plays with her, so she seems strong. Six yeah. cards is a bit low, you know, out of 100. But that being said, I mean, that pretty much do the same thing with Winota. But, I mean, you guys have seen me woof with her enough times as well, so.
I've also seen you hit and crush us with it, too, so.
Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here.
It's also an infinite mana outlet in the command zone, so that's always a potentially strong thing to keep in mind, especially because it can all be activated for colorless. It's a lot easier to just like accidentally fall into infinite colorless mana compared to generating infinite colored mana. I mean, you'd still have to do something with your handful of cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard allies, but I don't know. It's interesting.
So what you're saying is you could use food chain here too.
Well, no, you could, because food chain would only let you cast Tazri.
Yep, you cannot use food chain mana to activate Tazri's ability. Before we get out of here, why don't we see, Jake, I think you have a hot seat for us.
Okay, so in Ikoria, we had some Godzilla crossover stuff on some cards, and for the people who are following upcoming sets, the upcoming core set has actually been replaced by a set that is based in Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms setting. So my quick question is, if you could have a magic set tied into an existing work of fiction, whether it's like a movie, book, video game, whatever, where would you choose for it to be set? While you guys think about it, I'll go ahead and throw out my answer. I have two. One for the one person who is familiar with this, maybe. The Practitioner Universe. There's a web serial writer named Wildbow who writes a lot of pretty cool stories. My favorites are Pact and Pale, and basically they're like a modern day magic with a twist, kind of depressing at times, so heads up if you're heading into that. But it has lots of really interesting quirks, and I would like to see how some of that would be handled. But a more well-known reference would be the original Diablo game. I think it has a cool atmosphere that would work well for magic. I mean, there's a lot of similarities right there. I'm sure there's some kind of interesting like dungeon delving mechanic that could be created. And I don't know. I just think it's a thing from my youth that I really enjoyed, and I think it could cross over into magic. So what do you guys got?
It's funny that you mentioned Ikoria, because it's the one that gave me this one, that it was first spoiled with the create your own monsters kind of mutate effect. For me, it would be Monster Hunter. I would like to see it to where when a specific type of creature dies, instead of going to the graveyard, it actually flips and becomes a piece of equipment that you can then apply to a creature that killed it if it was killed in combat.
Nice.
That would be kind of cool. I think the one that I would like to see would probably hew pretty close to what we saw with the Godzilla cards from Ikoria, where they were basically just promo art on an existing card, just reskinned with a new name scribbled on top of it. And I would kind of like to see my old favorite video game series, Legend of Zelda, make a comeback with it. I would love to see some reskins of famous pieces of equipment into the Master Sword or the Bracelet of Power or the Ocarina of Time. I would love to see some legend reskinned as Link the Hero of Time or Zelda or Sheik or God Ganon. Come on, that would just be so awesome.
The chain veil is Majora's Mask.
Yes, 1,000 times yes. Where was that altar artist? I gotta get a hold of this guy.
I don't know, it's just like I think back to Ikoria with like the Titanothor's Rex that we were talking about with cycling. Well, that instead of, you killing it and just getting a, a hexproof counter or a trample counter, you kill it and then you just like, oh, well, its tail, plates make a good club. So now you've got this club equipment that when it's equipped gives you, plus X, plus X, whereas the creature's power and toughness, and then whatever key text that had like trample. So cool. Now your little dopey 1/1 that's in play now has walk around wielding this giant dragon's tail for like plus 8 and trample. Smash.
Yeah, we've all enjoyed us some good Monster Hunter times. Well, I hope you have all enjoyed this episode of Gemstone Mine. This was what's in our cart, and obviously we couldn't cover everything. Not every card in every set is for everyone, as Wizards likes to tell us. And if you have a favorite card that is something you've been waiting for and has already gone into your cart and is being pre-ordered and you are counting down the seconds till it ships to you, let us know. So until next time, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.